With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you ready?
Hey guys, come on. Bring it in.
Clap your hands now.
I'm Gregory Porter. Welcome to The Hang.
Watch what happens when the people catch wind of the wild.
Here we are, right where it all started, Los Angeles.
Liquid spirit.
We recorded the very first episode of The Hang with the mighty Jeff Goldblum just down the road in Hollywood. We went to London, we went to Cheltenham, or Cheltenham. We went to Mallorca to visit the lovely Annie Lennox. And now, 10 episodes later, we're back in L.A. on Sunset Strip, to be precise, with the final guest of the season. So, who is the guest that has the honor of closing out the debut series of The Hang? She is just about the hottest singer in the U.K. right now. She's created her own unique blend of soul, R&B, and jazz, and whatever else you might think of. Songs like Lately, Like Me will definitely make you swoon. Please welcome Celeste. Come on, bring it in.
Hello.
Thank you, Celeste, for joining us today and to talk about music and love and life and inspiration. And we're going to talk about whatever we want to talk about. Food, cars. Or whatever. But tell me about music and your family. Your mother and father or grands.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned grands. I think like the first music that I ever heard was played to me by my granddad. And I was about 3 years old. Uh-huh. And I remember it so clearly. And I think I tell quite a lot of people this story, but I remember he had this like cherry red Jaguar. It was like some 90s Jaguar. Yeah. And he was so proud that he like bought it for himself kind of thing. And it had like a CD changer in the back. Yeah. So like in the boot or in the trunk.
Yeah, yeah, in the boot.
You
know,
yeah. You could put 6 CDs inside, but you had to put them in before you went and drove the car off. So he would get his 6 CDs from the kitchen cupboard and it would be like Ella Fitzgerald, yeah. Aretha Franklin, Nina Simone, yeah. Otis Redding, like Sarah Vaughan, all that sort of thing. And wow. I don't even know if he had enough CDs to fit in the 6 changes.
Yeah.
But then we would get in, but he would always choose the Aretha Franklin CD, like whatever happened.
Yeah.
And one of the songs I remember so clearly is Spanish Harlem.
Yeah.
And even now when I hear that, it's so nostalgic for me. Like I just remember being like this young kid. I think I was 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking at my granddad like with so much admiration. Like, thanks for showing me this.
No, tell me.
Yeah.
Tell me. What is this... This was he a British gentleman? Is he a grey-haired at the time?
he's British. I think he's kind of like of a certain era where like men wore suits all the time.
Yeah.
And he still does.
Tweed.
Yeah, or like, yeah, I guess like then. But now it's changed. I guess it's like linen and cottons and things like that. Like I performed on something like a week ago, like a TV show, and he called me like, what shall I wear? Shall I wear my new suit? I was like, I don't know, like if people really wear suits to this kind of thing. But he didn't in the end, but he often does. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's cool. So it was your grandfather. What about your parents? Did they influence their music? Was there?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mention it because there was only like a couple of things I remembered my mom playing me when I was a kid. But I think the music that she played was way more like, it way more informed like an attitude rather than like a sound or a voice. And everything she listened to was way more like rowdy and like erratic. And I remember we would listen to
like rock or
well, we would listen to the Clash or okay. we would listen to the Specials and every or even if we listened to like Robin S, like you know that song "Show Me Love." She loved that song.
Yeah,
like 90s dance vocalists.
Yeah, yeah.
They always had like a certain energy and attitude that was far less like relaxed to like the jazz and soul, I guess, that my granddad would like play me.
Yeah.
But I really loved that. And I think like we used to dance on the table to it and stuff right. in the kitchen.
So I take it your mother had you, she was in her 20s or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, she was 26 when she had me.
Okay, so
yeah.
you had a young mother who was still getting her groove on.
Yeah.
When the time you learned how to dance.
Yeah, that's it. Actually, my mum had gone traveling when she was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And she lived in sort of like a suburban part of England, and it's just outside of London. And she just decided, which was like kind of different to her friends at the time, that she just wanted to like go and travel and like see different places. And she ended up here, actually in LA,
yeah.
which is where she met my dad, and she had me here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she had so many different influences in terms of like her taste and her style and what she liked to listen to. I think at one point she lived in Hong Kong when she was about 23, and she said one night she went to this tiny, tiny bar and she just saw this woman with this like amazing hair. She says wicked hair. And it was Diana Ross like singing in this bar. And I still don't really understand like why she was singing in this supposedly really small, like private place. And
yeah.
then I don't really know how my mom ended up in there. But that's one of the people that like my mom loves, and like
yeah.
we both kind of idolize her and her style. And,
yeah, you kind of got Diana Ross hair today.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
There's a couple of shots, pictures that I've seen you in. Yeah, very stylish you are.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, but I love the fact that you were absorbing, you know, these classic sounds. Quite frankly, classic Black American sounds.
Yeah,
and you know, European, British pop or rock or, you know, I love the fact that this clash in music that can happen, that can create something in the head, can create a mix in the head.
Yeah. It's
that
like,
can come out
yeah.
and it's something totally new, something that references something that happened in the past, but it's totally new and totally you. We're kind of writing a song. Right
I like
here.
That.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. For me, my mother and my father and the relationship that I had with them, their presence, and with my father, his absence has mm-hmm. created a wave of powerful energy.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
That has been a catalyst for my writing and my thinking. And even the way that I think about and treat my son. He's 6 years old. And I'm constantly finding myself writing songs for him or leaving him a message that I think he might hear when he's 20. And I'm also writing messages to my father, who's deceased and
yeah.
has been so for 20 years.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm saying something to him. As a song on my record called How to Sing.
Yeah.
On the new record that's
yeah, yeah.
on its way. And I'm talking to him in an interesting way. I realized when I looked at the lyrics, and at the end, I just kept saying, Heavenly Father.
Yeah.
Now, normally we think of the Heavenly Father as...
Yeah, like a
right.
Yeah.
Jesus, God. But... I'm thinking of my father, my actual
yeah,
father.
When
I say
Heavenly
Father. Now that's just the way I sang it in church.
Yeah.
But what I mean is my actual father. I feel like I can have more of a relationship with him now
mm-hmm.
than I did when he was alive. I was together with him maybe 6 or 7 times. But I think his absence has created something. And a powerful thing, a thing that I harvest and I use in my music. I don't know if it's something that you've done already. Is it something that you think you will do in the future? Is his presence or his your knowledge of him, however great or small it is it something that you think will fuel your?
Yeah, I think like it's cool to hear what you had to say actually, because I had a similar experience where I lived here with my mum and my dad until I was about 3 years old, and then they separated and me and my mum moved back to England, and I only really spent like 10 times with him or something in my whole life or less.
Yeah.
And so little that I can count it basically.
Yeah, same.
But each time was really important and really significant, and I remember it so clearly. And my dad did actually pass away when I was about 16 years old. Yeah. And actually it was that moment when I really started like writing down everything that I felt, because I didn't really know like how to contain it. And at that point I hadn't really experimented at all with like writing songs and making music. I kind of knew I could sing from like different bits when I was a child, and I would sing and adults would maybe say like, you have a good voice, and sometimes it happens now, like I'll sing in a taxi or something and like singing to myself and the taxi driver will be like, you can carry on, you've got a good voice. And I'm like, oh, thank you. But yeah, so I just started writing actually a diary to begin with. And then that gradually turned into like writing poems. And at first, like they were so intense and they were like so sort of like, so in pain, I guess. And then I remember the exact evening that one of the poems turned into a song that had like the words all of a sudden like had rhythm and they had melody. Yeah. And the next day I was going to the studio for the first time ever to like a writing session.
Yeah.
And I took that idea and I didn't really know how these things worked at that stage at all, and I was just like, well, I wrote this poem last night and I kind of sing it like this, if you can call this singing at this point, like, I don't know. And they were like, no, this is really good. So yeah, it just turned into a song. So I think out of like hardship sometimes people like find a way to cope that is kind of sometimes a distraction, but it's, yeah, I guess it's an inspiration at points. And I guess a lot of people find that sometimes they're more inspired by like the harder parts of their life.
The things that move you.
Yeah, that's
things that
it.
Have moved that's, you or yeah, even pushed you.
That's it. That's exactly what it is. It's like a move. It's like a push.
Yeah.
And there are other things that do that, but that was definitely like the main catalyst for me to like want to create.
Yeah. Interesting you said this about your first writing being about the things, the powerful emotions that you had going into your diary. The exact same thing happened to me. My father passed when I was 20, and I had a pain in my chest, and I went to a doctor because I thought it was like, you know,
something
like a real
really serious.
Yeah, something serious. And they said, nope, nothing's wrong with you. And the doctor suggested that I go to a therapist. And I don't know if he thought it was like, you know, that I was just like faking it, or I don't know what he thought.
Right.
I didn't mention anything about, you know, any bad relationship or anything. So I went to see this therapist at my college. And she asked me about my mother, about my relationships, about my brothers and sisters.
Yeah,
everything was great. And then she said, tell me about your father. And I just lost it. The tears started to flow and I cried, and my chest pain slightly lifted.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't this pain I was having was kind of this broken heart thing.
Yeah, it's a mental release.
Totally mental. Yeah. And at which point I started to write. And my first songs, I used to write songs, you know, silly things or write about love or something. I would write it down on a piece of paper and I'd throw it away because I had.
You didn't know what it meant.
Nor did I consider myself a songwriter.
Yeah.
But at the point at which I started thinking about my father and that pain, the music came out of me as song. And I think the first thing I wrote was, I was thinking about, was my father there when I was born? And I was thinking of myself as a little boy and thinking of myself as a man.
Yeah.
So I was talking to myself as a little boy in the song.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, little boy, I know your name. I know your question. I have the same. Was he working? Was he sleeping? Was he standing in the doorway when they said, here's your brand new baby boy? You know, this is, so what this is was melodic therapy for me.
Yeah.
And not only was it that for me, I when I started to perform the song years later, I realized that the personal is universal. And I was listening to your songs and you had, what was the lyric? Isn't it funny? Isn't it strange?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, that last lyric is cold blooded. It's so strong.
Thank you.
Isn't it funny how, you know, strangers, friends, and lovers, back to strangers.
Yeah.
That's a cool. that's cool.
Thank you very much.
That's your writing.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote that song with two other people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a funny day because I think a few days before we finished the song, I'd been in the studio with just one of them.
Yeah.
And he'd played the chords that eventually ended up in the final song. And when I go to the studio, I like to have a microphone, kind of like how we're sitting now. Like, yeah. I like to have a microphone in front of me.
Yeah.
Or even just on my lap, kind of relaxed. And so when I hear something, I'm ready to just pick it up and sing the idea as it comes to me, kind of thing.
Right.
And usually I have my voice coming through the speakers. I don't know why that is, but I think it's something to do with also when I play live.
Yeah.
I really like feeling the room and like hearing the room.
Yeah, the intimacy and the ambience. Of the sound.
Yeah, that's it. So I like that in the studio. However small the room is, I'm like, turn it up, turn it up. And yeah, I heard the chords and I mumbled the first lyrics of the songs, like, I tried for you.
Yeah.
And then it says, like, tried to see through all the smoke. And then it kind of tails off into this mumble because I didn't know what I was going to say yet, but I just knew how it made me feel. Mm-hmm. And actually, like, I left that idea in the final version of the song because I think like the emotion said enough. Whereas if I tried to like shoehorn a lyric in there, it maybe wouldn't have actually translated as well as just like feeling something.
That's the truth.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, and it was a one time I think I kind of just allowed myself to ignore the rule of like, you have to finish the lyric kind of thing. But yeah, and then a few days later we went in to finish this song. And I still didn't really know what it was going to be about. And we spoke about it and we all spoke about like how it made us feel. And one of my friends now, who was in the room at the time, was just like, this kind of just makes me think of when you bump into like your ex. And he was like, it can be in a coffee shop. And like, you just look at them and you can't say anything and you can't speak. And all of a sudden, like, everything you knew about them just like completely goes out of your head and you don't know how to approach them or be around them.
Yeah.
And then there came like the idea for the song, really. And it was something so simple, but I guess something that I hadn't really thought about in that exact way before.
Yeah.
So, I was pleased.
Very powerful, very profound. And it's something I think about all the time. How do people that could be, you know, just milk and coffee, I mean, together, just doing everything, finishing each other's sentences, loving one another, even to the point of intimacy where, you know, creating another being. How is it that they can, yes, you can fall out of love, but then not even fall out of love, become enemies? You know, not even strangers, but then enemies.
Yeah.
It is as a child and even today is still a difficult thing for me because I'm a solution. I'm always trying to find solutions and I'm always trying to find peace. And I always love to leave my enemies as friends in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, I played football and I used to knock people's heads off. I was but after I knocked them down, I would like to extend my hand to help pick them up. Now, this idea, this personal, this, you know, whether it's something that's even inspired by something that happened in your life or not, the idea of creating that poetry, and it being useful for many, many people, isn't that an awesome thing?
Yeah.
Don't you feel lucky?
Yeah, definitely.
To first of all, to have the gift to do that, and then to have the facility to sing it and to say it, and to have also a career in which people will hear it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things for me, I'm still quite new to like releasing my music and people actually hearing what I've been doing in my own private space. And I think,
don't worry about
but
that.
But when you're writing, you know how it makes you feel. And I guess the people that are in the room with you, but it's really hard to like even think about or consider at the time how it will make other people feel until you see it happening in front of you or you start to hear people respond to it. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. Like recently I've had messages from people that have said like they've gone through a breakup and it's really, the lyrics have really helped them to understand and rationalize what they're going through, which is kind of just still really crazy to me.
Have you at all thought about or explored or has it ever come up in your mind about your racial identity coming out in your voice? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny because except for me, no one really sings. No one sings in my family. No one can sing. I think my grandma, her dad could. And in like the 40s, he used to sing on the radio. And this was on British radio. And there was a competition called Opportunity Knocks. And it was kind of like a talent competition.
Wow.
And you only heard their voice. And three people would sing on like a Thursday evening.
Mm-hmm.
But you could repeat. You could do it more than once. And he did it and he won quite a few times. So I guess it's kind of funny because that kind of like off on a tangent away from whether I felt like my racial identity has expressed itself without nurture, kind of thing. But it's just like, it's weird to me that I'm the only one that can sing.
Do you think about maybe your dad's musical influence? I mean, there is some, this is an interesting thing. My father didn't, remember I was talking about this song that the song is, "You didn't teach me a dadgone thing but how to sing."
Yeah, yeah.
It happened in an interview.
Yeah.
That's how I came to this. I was in an interview in the UK and the interviewers asked me, "Where did you get your singing voice?" For some reason, the entirety of my career or maybe even my life, I hadn't thought of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew my mother sang. She had a beautiful operatic voice, high voice. But at my father's funeral, they said, "Boy, your father could sing.
Really?
Your father could sing."
Wow.
And I was like, okay.
That's cool.
Maybe that's where this thing came from. And so I said that in the interview. And then afterwards, I was considering it. I was like, wow, he did give me something. He did give me something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, did you ever know if your father sang or?
I know he couldn't sing because I heard him trying and it wasn't good. He used to sing, you know, that song Strawberry Fields.
Yeah.
He used to sing that song down the telephone to me.
And the Beatles song.
Yeah.
Strawberry. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. Forever. Yeah.
And every time I'd be like, okay.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Please. Daddy. Stop that.
But it was charming. But actually, this is kind of an interesting story, and I told this to one of my friends last year, and it was basically like the story of how my mum and my dad met. And her friend was seeing his friend who lived on this boat somewhere out here, And my mom's friend had disappeared for a couple of days, and she was like, okay, I need to find her. What's going on?
Yeah, that's a problem.
But I guess they were just wild. They were young. They were doing their thing. So she got the telephone number for this boat that this guy lived on that her friend was seeing.
Okay.
And then this man answers, and it's not the guy. It's this other man. And like, my mom answers. She's like, hello, is Ali there? I'm looking for my friend. What's going on? And this guy's like, don't worry, she's here. She's here with whoever, whatever his name is. And then this guy starts flirting with my mom down the telephone. And she's like, he actually sounds quite nice. Whatever. And then that ended up being my dad. So he introduced himself. He's like, yo, my name's Beauclair. I'm sure he didn't say yo, actually. And then they kept bumping into each other. And my mom just like, really became in awe of him and like really fell in love with him.
And was he American, British, or?
Well, he was actually born in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
And he was raised there until he was 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
And his mum was here, so he was raised by his grandparents in Jamaica.
Okay.
And his mum was sent over here to like go to university and sort of like get herself established
to California.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then by the time she was 30, they felt like she was in a position where she was like ready to like look after him by herself. So they sent him over here and he ended up living with her here. But and then in his 20s, he went to London to go to university. So it was kind of like he had this really mixed childhood, and his accent kind of reflected that, like his whole family would always kind of like joke and about his accent because it wasn't Jamaican, it wasn't really American, it was kind of like a pretend English accent or something. But yeah, I told my friend the story about them having their first like encounter over the telephone, and he said, well, you know, like maybe you inherited people falling in love with your voice from your dad, just in a different way.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. That was wow, kind of cool. Beautiful. Yeah. And I care a lot about people's voices. Like, speaking voices are so important to me. Like, that doesn't have to be posh, but
yeah,
it's like a real, you know, like if somebody has a really nice speaking voice,
yeah,
it can change like everything about them.
Yeah, yeah, this is yeah. true. This yeah. is true. This is quite a British thing. This I think I first heard that when I was in college, and I met my first British friend,
mm-hmm.
Philippa, and she talked about going to school and developing this posh accent.
Yeah.
And I was like, first of all, what does posh mean?
What is posh?
And you know, and how is a posh accent a good or a bad thing? And so it was interesting. She showed me the way that she used to speak as a little girl.
Yeah.
And then she showed me the way she spoke after she went to this prestigious high school.
Okay.
I thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah.
But I liked them both, so I was like, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. You're listening to The Hang. Hit subscribe or follow on your podcast thingamajig of choice to get every episode of The Hang fresh off the presses.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're in Los Angeles for a reason. What is that reason?
Well, I'm here to write some new music. Yeah.
And is your producer here? Is the musician you want to work with here? Or is this the place to be?
Well, I think here in Los Angeles and in America in general, there's a huge pool of artists and producers and like instrumentalists that work within that soul and jazz realm.
Yeah.
But that also have had the chance to like get recognition for it in a way that's equal to like the mainstream.
Yeah.
And I think there are pockets of that in the UK, but it's maybe not as prevalent as it is here.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just because it's bigger here. And well, actually, I think it's also because the origin is kind of here too, you know, yeah, like from blues music.
Yeah.
And it's way more ingrained in the people.
Yeah.
For example, you can meet people of all different ages here that have like an equal understanding and knowledge of like music from the 40s,
mm-hmm,
music in the 70s, and then like hip hop in the early 90s, and then something that happened 2 weeks ago,
yeah,
or this week.
Yeah.
And you don't really have to explain to somebody why those things make sense and why there is like a thread in between all of those things. I think there's people that just understand that because they've lived it and their parents have and their grandparents have. And then it naturally comes out in the way that they either play their instrument or the way that they make a beat.
Yeah.
Or even just the way they speak to you and address you in a session, and that, yeah, can be inspiring to you.
Yeah.
Like, I remember working with someone before, and he was talking about Erykah Badu writing Tyrone, and he was like, come with that attitude. Like, did you hear that? Did you hear what she said? He's like, you can't use my phone. And like, he's like, I'm getting tired of your shit. Like, all of this stuff.
Right.
And
right,
it kind of just reminds you. And I think it's important to have people, like, he's about 40 or 50 years old, I think.
Yeah.
And It was good to hear that from an older person, you know what I mean, rather than like my friends listen to that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was good to hear somebody that had that like knowledge and wisdom, but also had like a young ear kind,
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think of when you write songs, do you think of it connecting to a body of work? Do you think of it having a continuous message or a theme, or yeah, is that your process?
Yeah, I always do. I think because I'm so interested in the actual sounds and like the instrumental side of things, to me there's like no other way I can imagine it other than hearing it as one big picture kind, mm-hmm, of thing. And obviously, there's songs that are more suitable to like people listening in solitude by themselves. And then there's songs that you can imagine like loads of people listening to together, or like at a party, or then at 5 a.m. with 3 of their friends or something. So when I write one of those songs, it's hard for me to imagine it by itself kind of thing. Like, I always see it, how it will come together with other stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, I think like on an EP I made earlier this year, it's called Lately EP.
Mm-hmm.
The first 2 songs I wrote for that were actually like within a couple of days of each other. Like, I went to Leeds, which is like in the north of England.
I love Leeds.
Oh,
yeah.
You do?
I've been, yeah, all over, yeah, the UK for a long time. I love,
yeah,
it. It's my favourite place.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
so
really cool, actually. Yeah. And I think as well, I've been to a few shows I haven't played a show in Leeds yet, but I've been to a few shows there, and like something I love about watching and listening to music there is the crowd are like very focused, but they only care about the music. They only care if you're good.
Yeah.
They don't care like who you know. They don't care what you look like. Like, it doesn't matter. And you,
yeah,
see like a really genuine reaction to something. And that's, I really enjoy like listening to music in that environment without, mm-hmm, the kind of all of these other things going on, all these other factors that kind of like inform you to feel a certain way about something. You can kind of just close your eyes and listen to it.
Yeah, and that's music.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's music. That's the other thing that's more than just music.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really powerful. Yeah. I love Leeds. Is that Yorkshire?
It kind of is.
Yorkshire pudding is not pudding.
It's definitely not sweet.
I'm still trying to get to the bottom of this Yorkshire pudding.
Have you had a Yorkshire pudding?
I have.
Do you like them?
I'm confused about pudding. Okay, first of all, pudding in America is a particular thing. It's like there's vanilla pudding or chocolate pudding.
It's is it like a cake with some sauce?
It's like a custard
sauce.
Kind of okay. A custardy kind of a thing. But pudding in the UK, it's basically anything sweet, really.
Yeah, you've got bread pudding, which is mad. Like, I still don't know why people eat that, to be honest. But older people love it. It's literally like bits of bread, like slices of bread.
So, like some bread that nobody wanted.
Plain bread. Right. And then it's just got like butter and like
cinnamon.
Right,
I've had that. Sticky toffee pudding.
That's good.
Fabulous.
That's the
wonderful.
Best.
It's the best. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, this is a conversation.
Okay. Well, earlier when we were talking about our idols and like people that we looked up to, and obviously you mentioned that Nat King Cole had like passed before you were even born.
Yeah.
But has there been a moment where anybody has kind of like recognized your achievements and it's kind of like made you sit back and be like, wow, I'm really proud of what I've done here?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, some really special like people, and then I don't want to say not special, but some really people that you would never know.
Mm-hmm.
And they contact me and I'm still moved. Listen, girl, let me tell you, I'm just blown away that I have this life and this career and that I get to sing. I get to do something that I love. So when Michelle Obama came to my show in D.C., I said to myself, the president of the United States is going to ask her where she's been.
Yeah.
And she's going to say to the president, oh, I went to go see this singer, Gregory Porter. You know, the guy I've been listening to for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because she told me, she's like, yeah, we listened to you in the White House. And that blew me away.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, I don't mean to just, you know. And so when I performed for Your Queen, and I said, I wonder, will she talk about this, you know, afterwards and say, oh, that
definitely.
Young man.
Yeah.
<You know?
laughs> Yeah.
That's fascinating to me. But also, you know, catching the ear of like, you know, musical icons, whether it be, you know, Quincy Jones or somebody that you've, you know, admired for years, maybe Sting or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I heard you singing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That blows me away. But also like children.
Okay.
And when they connect to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had some of my songs remixed. And so, you know, I find myself at a festival in you guys say Ibiza.
Oh yeah.
But I find myself at a festival in Ibiza, you know, with a bunch of, you know, shirtless 20-year-olds and bikinied 20-year-olds, and you know, I couldn't make my way through the crowd because people were grabbing my neck. And so,
oh wow,
there's something extraordinary about the connection that people have with music, and I'm blown away. I have a thank you song on the record, on my next record, and it's a thank you to the forces that have helped me, you know, get to this place.
Yeah. What's it called?
Thank you.
Okay, good.
I think.
Yeah.
Well, many great things I think we're going to hear from you. You're classic. Keep being yourself. Keep being classic.
Thank you.
And you will become a classic.
Thank you
very much. We'll be listening
much.
To you in 100 years. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for hanging.
No, thank you so much for having me.
And that's it
for season one. Thanks to all my guests, Jeff Goldblum, Annie Lennox, Jamie Cullum, Ama Asante, Charlotte Gunsberg, Giles Terrera, Kamasi Washington, Giles Peterson, Don Was, Celeste, but most of all, you. Thank you so much for joining us, hanging out to hear our stories, and hopefully getting to know us and the world a little bit better.
Clap your hands now.
We'll be back very soon, because frankly, I'm enjoying this way too much. But until then, I'll see you at the concert. Come on. I'm Gregory Porter, and this has been The Hang, a Cup and Nuzzle production.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.